Greetings, Slidell. This is Bob Riles, your host of the new Grace Radio series, Voices. This new adventure in programming for Grace Radio focuses on our voices of our neighbors here in Slidell. Our guest today on Voices is our own District 1 Senator, Sharon Hewitt. Thank you, Senator Hewitt, for being with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I was looking at your bio. You're in a lot of important committees. It looks like you're the Vice Chairman of the Senate Transportation, Highways, and Public Works Committee, as a member of the Senate Finance Committee, the Senate Environmental Quality Committee, the Joint Legislative Committee on the Budget, looks like you got your hands on the purse strings, as well as some other important committees, the Select Committee on Coastal Restoration and Flood Control, and the Select Committee on Women and Children. Many important things. And we thank you for taking up those responsibilities for us.
Well, I'm excited. I, you know, didn't sign up for this job to stand on the sidelines, so I'm in with both feet.
It looks like it. And, you know, you've covered really a broad area, everything from families and children to environmental issues to oil production and energy to building bridges and highways. That's pretty much of a full scope of interest.
Well, yeah, I think we're all kind of called upon to contribute in the areas where we can. And, you know, there are only, I think, three engineers in the legislature, so I bring kind of an engineering perspective. I'm pretty much the only oil and gas person with any kind of an energy background, which is rare, you know, for a state where we're the second largest producer of oil and gas for that industry, which is so vital to our state, to not be represented. And so, you know, I think that that's part of what I can add. I can add my voice to that industry. You know, we have very few women legislators. And so, you know, we're all a product of our experiences, and so I think that I can bring a different perspective to some of those family issues in the legislature.
Following Senator A.G. Crow for a long-term successful run, following him I'm sure was a challenge, but it looks like you're making your own path in your own way.
I hope so. He served our area for many years, and we've been very blessed to have him. And, you know, we continue to stay in touch, and he helped through the transition and kind of getting me started in the legislature. So, but I've found many friends in the legislature and many mentors, and it's a steep learning curve, but I'm really enjoying it.
What are some of your surprises? You know, I mean, many of us who are listening and here today have started new jobs before, and we had a preconceived notion of what it was, and then we got to the job and said, oh my. What are some of your oh my's and some of your good surprises? What was some of the joys that you discovered in Baton Rouge?
I'll say one of the things that has really impressed me, you know, I worked for a very professional company. I worked for Shell for many years, and they were the number one company on the Forbes 500 list. It's a tremendous company to work for, very professional environment. They only hire the best of the best. So I've kind of grown up in a very professional environment, and I've got to tell you that, you know, what I saw at the Capitol in terms of the staff there was very impressive. You know, not only do they have a tremendous amount of experience, most of them, you know, 25 plus years of experience, so they're experts in the area of policy, but I have never been around a group with more of a positive attitude. It's very uplifting. The hours are grueling. The pressure is tremendous, not just on the legislators, but on the staff as well. And the amount of work that happens really all during the night to prepare for the next day is staggering. And I can tell you that I absolutely not one single time ever heard anyone in the Capitol complain. No one ever had a cross word. Everyone is very uplifting and positive, even when we don't agree. You know, and even though we might have a different perspective in terms of how to solve some of the problems in Baton Rouge, I was very pleased to see such a positive attitude and a willingness to work together.
There were so many controversial subjects or difference of opinions and arguing back and forth with budget and where do we cut and this and that. Where did you find the place of unity? What was the focus of the legislators, both in the Senate and if you have experience from the House? What were they shooting for?
Well, the biggest thing that we faced really were short-term issues. You know, when we started February the 14th, Sunday, February 14th was our first day in session. It was 19 consecutive weeks total over three different sessions, the longest amount of consecutive days ever served by legislators in the history of the state. So we started on February 14th in a first special session, and the objective of that session was to close a $940 million budget gap between February 14th and June 30th, which is when our fiscal session ends. The objective, which we did, the objective of the regular session that started a couple of days after that was really to create the budget for the new fiscal year and to take care of other issues that were non-fiscal in nature. The projection at that time for the deficit for the upcoming fiscal year, which started on July 1st, was $2.2 billion shortfall. And then the second special session, which followed after that, was really to correct some of the mistakes, quite honestly, that we made in the first special session.
Okay.
And so I would say that what was very comforting to me is that I think there was tremendous agreement in what the problems are facing our state. You know, it's almost like they say, you know, treating an alcoholic, the first step is to admit that you have a problem.
Yes.
And I believe that as a legislature and the governor's office, we all admit that we have problems. Our focus was largely on the short term because the patient was bleeding out on the table. You know, we were in a position where we were not going to be able to pay our bills. The state was not going to be able to pay our bills starting in April. And so it took us working together. We have different philosophies really on how to balance raising new revenue and cutting expenses. And I believe that we did kind of a combination of that because we had to, again, to address some very short-term shortfalls. Now that we have, I'll say, stabilized the budget, I think looking forward, we're very committed to the idea that we have to enact major reforms in this next session, which will start in April of 2017. So there's a lot of work being done by many of us in the legislature in the off-season, I'll call it, to look at major reforms in the way we budget, in the way we raise revenue, in our prison system, you know, criminal justice reforms, and many other things. Higher education is an area that I've been working in as well, and looking at ways that we can deliver those things more efficiently. Healthcare, of course, is another big area. Looking at ways we can identify how to deliver those more efficiently and more cost-effectively.
Healthcare and education. As I understood, these were probably the only two areas where you had a whole lot of flexibility, that most of the spending mandates were constitutionally required. So when it comes, it looks like it always comes to education and healthcare as though they were emotional issues that the public would have to go along with. But maybe some reform is required in those areas, that not so much an emotional issue, but maybe we just haven't been doing it the best that we could.
Well, I think so. And I'll give you a great example of that in the area of higher education. Well, first of all, I passed a bill. I did author and pass a number of bills in the session, one of which had to do with reforming higher education. One of the things that I heard quite a bit on the campaign was the perception by people who live in this area that perhaps we have too many universities in our state per capita. You know, Florida has fewer universities, Texas has fewer universities for the number of citizens they serve. And so the question came up quite a bit. Do we have too many universities? And, you know, can we afford to fund all of these universities from the state's perspective with the TOPS and all that? So my bill actually instructs the Board of Regents, which is the governing body for higher education, to look at basically if they had a free drop, if you could start over with a clean sheet of paper, how would you organize higher education to deliver it more efficiently on a regional basis? And look at things like, do we have two-year universities that should be four-year universities, or four-year universities that should be two-year universities? Do we have opportunities to share facilities? Do we have facilities in disrepair that we need to completely close? Are programs that are not productive, you know, where we're not, there's not a, enough of a interest in those programs to continue to fund them. So there's lots to look at. And I'll give you a great example right here locally of something that's being done that is exactly what we need to do statewide. And that is work that's being done between the North Shore Technical Community College, Delgado, and Nunez. Now, all three of those two-year schools are in my district, and as you know, we're building a new facility in Lacombe for the North Shore Technical Community College. And it'll be ready in January. As a matter of fact, we had to work really hard to continue to fight for the funding for that project, which the governor had initially said he was going to shut it down almost on the day we were pouring concrete for the foundation. So anyhow, we got that project back on track, and it's under construction right now. It should be open in January for the spring semester. And what the chancellors of those three schools have done is agreed to work together.
Oh, my.
Delgado will actually be sharing space with the North Shore Technical Community College, and they are working together along with Nunez and Southeastern to offer classes for students where they're not competing against each other, but they're offering unique programming so that students will be able to go back and forth between those schools to develop a curriculum. You know, so they're broadening the offerings.
Sure.
And they'll all get credit no matter which school they're associated with. So they'll be able to kind of cross-pollinate and then graduate, you know, from whichever school is the appropriate school. So it's a great thing for our area, and it's a great example of schools working together to share resources, both in terms of facilities and curriculum offerings and things like that, that is just going to be a great thing for our citizens. And so what I hope is that we can take that kind of culture and that kind of mentality to the state level and do that on a bigger scale.
What a great model for the rest of the state to be able to see institutions actually cooperating with each other. At the end, while they maintain their identities, there's no real hero except a better product for our children.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're looking for.
Yes, and the competition really should not be amongst ourselves within the state of Louisiana. The competition really should be beyond our state borders, you know, so that we work to keep our students here in our state. We want to attract their students into our state and not compete against each other, which is what we have done for so many years, so that right now every university feels like they have to offer everything.
Well, that's a great program to see the cooperation between the schools. I'm sure that'll be a model for the rest of the state. You had mentioned technical school in Lacombe. College education is for many people, and it's a great thing. But college education is not always the answer to everybody's giftings and skills. You mentioned a technical school. What efforts are we making in the area of providing technical training that may be able to encourage more industry to come, help Louisiana to step up a little bit?
Well, it's very important. You're right. Four-year universities are not for everyone, and we are lucky in our state in that we do have a number of industries where you can have a two-year degree or a certification in a skilled area and translate that directly into a very high-paying job. And what's been kind of exciting to me to learn recently is that many of our technical community colleges, for example, the North Shore Technical Community College, Nunez is another example, they have worked directly with industry, with the industries in their area to provide the skilled workforce that those industries need. In some cases, the industries have actually funded programs directly and offered internships for students that would ultimately come to work for them because they knew they were doing a plant expansion or some kind of big project. You know, there's a tremendous amount of work being done right now in expanding refineries and building LNG facilities, largely in the Lake Charles area, but we're seeing some of that in Plaquemine and St. Bernard as well. And we know, for example, we have a shortage of welders. And believe it or not, they're actually bringing welders in from Texas because we don't have enough of the workforce here locally to take care of all of those construction jobs. So it's a very important area, and those are very high-paying jobs. So I think there is definitely a role for technical community colleges, and in a state like Louisiana where we have so much industry available, great jobs in the offshore industry, which is suffering a little bit right now, but it'll come back, and we're going to need people that are ready to go to work. And that is one of the biggest factors when companies come to look at Louisiana as to whether to open up a plant here or a business of some sort. The first question they always ask is there a trained workforce available here that can support my business? And so I think we're doing a good job in this area. And there's a lot of work being done on the state level through the Workforce Development Commission and others to make sure that we have, you know, all the support from an educational standpoint to develop the workforce that our businesses need so that we can continue to grow our economy.
One of the things that impresses me in what you're talking about is so often in industry and business as well, and probably in government, people build their silos. This is my project in my area, and it looks like you're actively working to break down silos so that instead of storing up grain in all these different places, what we're doing is we're sharing resources, we're sharing energy, we're sharing ideas, we're working together, the schools working together, the collaboration between industry and education. Wow, that is just a phenomenal thought, and to be able to continue to encourage those things is exactly where it seems like we need to be going.
Well, absolutely, and that's what local people do all the time. That's what families do. That's what churches do, right? That's what you do to help each other. And we don't have the resources to operate in silos, and it doesn't make any sense to do that. So we have to be smarter, and we do have to work together. And I think that's one of the things that I have done successfully throughout my career is helped connect the dots and put people together. And so it is exciting. I think the sky is the limit. You know, we're in a good position. This is a good state to do that in. This district in particular offers quite a bit. And I'm anxious to continue to bring other industries and people together.
Well, you know, the other day I saw an article in the Slidell Independent. It was dealing with education, high school education. I believe the national average for ACT scores was 21.0. And in St. Tammany Parish, exceeded that. We were 21.5. Of all, and topped out all the parishes in Louisiana with that. But there's some that are underperforming. There's some not coming up to that. And I know it's outside of your district in your area, but are you aware of any educational type things out there that would kind of help us to climb out of that hole?
That's certainly a difficult topic. I guess if I had the answer to that, you know, I would be independently wealthy or president of the United States or something. We do need to improve K-12 education. And I think that, first of all, I am very proud of the public school system here in St. Tammany. I've been a big part of it as a volunteer for many, many years and have probably built more playgrounds in Slidell and the Military Road area schools and done more PTA projects than I could even remember. So we have a great public school system in St. Tammany. It is one of the reasons why people moved to St. Tammany. It is the reason why my husband and I moved here many years ago to raise our children in the public schools. And education is the secret to everything, don't you agree? It is what helps put people on a path to be successful. But yes, there are schools that are underperforming, and you can't fix it overnight. It's largely, you know, students that haven't had as many opportunities, perhaps they moved quite a bit, or they didn't have the family support that kept them in school on a regular basis where they were following through on their homework and things like that. We do have some work to do in that area. I do believe the schools all in the Slidell area, though, are continuing to improve from an accountability score standpoint. And I know that we have teachers and administrators that are very committed and are working really hard every day to make each of their students in their classes better every year.
Well, you know, I'm impressed with all the things you've talked about so far with your involvement at the grassroots level, getting involved, communication, children, education, all those things. But I see that you're also involved with regional things with the Southern Legislative Conference on Energy, that you've been appointed to two committees there, and I believe that you're also interested in some international things. So even though you've got your fingertips on all of the good things here in Slidell for us who voted for you, in addition to that, you're kind of reaching out beyond that to try to make a difference. Can you tell us about some of the things you're doing on a national or international level?
Well, sure. Energy is my professional background, as you know, and I am the only legislator, believe it or not, in the state of Louisiana that has any oil and gas professional background, which is crazy to me to know that because, you know, Louisiana is the second largest producer of oil and gas. It is the single biggest factor that drives the state's economy is oil and gas. You know, we're in a recession right now because of the oil and gas business. And, you know, we lost 16,000 jobs this year, largely in the oil and gas industry. So as goes the oil and gas industry, so goes the state. And it's very important to all of us. and it is an area where I think I can add my voice. There are things that we can do on the federal level, and I'm working with our delegation on the federal level that will help the industry and by default help the state. For example, there is a new 5-year leasing program in the Gulf of Mexico that needs to be renewed by Congress that will open up areas in the Gulf of Mexico for new development as well as open up areas on the Atlantic coast. And it's very important to me that Congress sign off on that and that the administration support that. And what happens to a lot of that revenue, I don't know if you realize this, but the revenue royalty from the production in the Gulf of Mexico goes to the federal government. And a part of that now comes back to the state of Louisiana, thanks to legislation that Senator Landrieu pushed several years ago. It's called Go Mesa. That revenue comes back, and it is directly linked to coastal restoration and protection projects in the state of Louisiana. So most of the funding for coastal restoration projects comes from oil and gas companies, either through the revenue or from the BP spill, et cetera. So that's very important to me. You know, it's a way to do some good work here in our district and in this parish to take care of our disappearing coastline and to protect our seafood industry and other things that are so important to us. I do serve on several national energy councils. We're looking not only at ways to continue to sustain oil and gas development and production for years to come, but also looking at renewable energy, which I think definitely has a place in our country's portfolio. We're just not ready to flip the switch and to go totally renewable. It's something that's going to take some time and that we are investing in along the way.
As we look forward to the future, of all the things we talked about a lot of the stuff that happened during the last session was fixing some things that need to be fixed right away and just taking care of some emergency type things. What's your vision for the future? What's the cutting edge for Louisiana? What do we need to be thinking to be in line with what you see for the future for Louisiana?
Well, I think as boring as it sounds, having a stable budget, something that businesses can count on, that's reliable, it's predictable, you know, a tax structure that businesses view as being fair and that citizens view as being fair, those are all things that are going to help grow our economy. So, you know, my work largely will be focused on that, because if you can't get your budget right and your expenses right, you can't get nothing else follows. Nothing else works if that doesn't work. So I will be looking in the off season at best practices by other states in terms of how they create their budget. And what I have seen in the state of Louisiana is a budget that just continues to grow every year. We just continue to grow government every year. And there's so many inefficiencies in the way we appropriate money. So what I would like to do is to get us to a point where we fund those programs and those projects that are critical and important to our citizens and do away with those things that really aren't creating any value, you know, so that again, we can lower the taxes, and there's a lot of things that we can do that will provide some stability while taking care of people that actually need the help. You know, those are the people that we want to support. It's not that I'm not being compassionate, but we need to do a better job of understanding how our money gets spent and looking for the right way to do it. So I think that is the number one issue before the state. I think it's an area where I can add value because of my business background, and we'll be in the next few years, my primary focus.
A few years ago, I heard Treasurer John Kennedy talking about budget things and the finance. He was saying that at that time, some years ago, that we were just kicking the can down the road. Point of view that you just expressed sounds like a very courageous point of view, because a balance between revenue and expenditures to learn to live within our income, no longer kicking the can down the road. And I think it's going to take a lot of courage and a lot of political capital to make that happen.
It will, and I understand that, but if we don't have people that are willing to stand up and do the right thing, we haven't sent the right people to Baton Rouge. And so I'm looking for those people. I do believe that there are other people there with me, serving with me, that are going to be courageous and are willing to do the right things. We have to. I mean, it's too important. And that's honestly the reason why I ran for office, is because we're at a crossroads, I think, for our state and for our country. And if good people don't step up and get involved, you know, we're not ever going to get the ship back on the right path. So I'm very committed to that. It is not going to be easy. We're all going to end up having to sacrifice a little bit, not just legislators who are making the tough votes, but all of the citizens are going to have to do that. And I'm hoping that they will give us a little bit of time. I'm not asking for a lot of time, but we do need a little bit of time and kind of a short leash over the next year or two to allow us to do the reforms that we really need to turn this state around. The days of kicking the can down the road are over. And I absolutely am not going to participate in that. I'm not going to support that. And I believe that there are other legislators that feel the same way.
This is so encouraging and refreshing to hear what you're telling us about the future. I'm happy to be from Louisiana. I'm proud of Louisiana. The efforts that you're making now, I think, are just going to enhance that for my family and for all of your constituents. So thank you so much for what you're doing there.
Well, you're very welcome. It's an honor for me to have an opportunity to serve and to add my voice. And I'm from Louisiana. I plan on being here for many years to come. And I want this to be a great place for our kids and our grandchildren. And so I can't wait to get back to Baton Rouge and to implement some of these ideas and some of the work that I'm going to be doing over the next few months to put some of these things into action.
Well, this has been exciting. Is there anything you'd like to add to what we've already talked about that would be important for our listeners to hear from you today?
I guess I would close by saying that I have an office here in Slidell. I'm located in the City Hall building. I also have an office in St. Bernard, which is another big part of my district. We're here, you know, 9 to 4. And if you have any issues or any feedback or any questions, I'm a very hands-on senator. I plan to be involved and very visible in the community, and I'd be happy to hear from you.
Well, thank you so much. I know from the first time that we heard you speak to us during the run for the seat, just really felt like you had a handle on what needed to be done. And interestingly and amazingly and wonderfully, the things that you're saying now are the same things you said then. And looks like it's happening, and that really is a blessing to me. So thank you, Senator.
Well, you're very welcome. I enjoyed visiting with you and look forward to many other great conversations as time goes on.
Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Well, thank you, Senator Hewitt. It's been great talking with you today. We're just really blessed to be in your office and to have this conversation. And thank you, Slidell, for tuning in to Voices on Grace Radio here today. We want to hear from you. You can call us at 985-250-1037. You can leave a comment, you can text, and we're particularly interested in any comments you have about today's interview with Senator Hewitt. We would encourage you to like us on Facebook, Grace Radio of Slidell. You can visit our website at www.graceradioofslidell.net, where you can leave a tax-free donation to keep the programming like this and other programming coming. We need your support. We feel like we're serving you, and we would like very much to be able to continue to bring high-quality programming to you. Again, you can call us at 985-250-1037. Well, that's it for now, Slidell. Join us again for Voices of Slidell at 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. and get in the flow of God's grace here in Slidell.